two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Yeah, 100% ready to go. Yeah, ready to go right now. I think the team's ready to go in general. I think, you know, pieces are coming together. Obviously, we got game days coming up, and that's where we start to really dial in on preparation, that kind of stuff.
Welcome on in, Cougar Tracks Podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. I'm the BYU Insider, Mitch Harper, and we got a great show lineup for you today. On this Thursday, August 22nd edition of the Cougar Tracks podcast powered by KSLSports.com. I hope you're having a fantastic week thus far. We're talking some BYU football 1 week till kickoff against the University of Utah. We'll get to a lot of football talk in this podcast as the Cougars have officially wrapped up fall camp practices, and then also Tom Holmoe commentary from Education Week. I was at Education Week and sat in on that Tom Holmoe conversation with fans and attendees at Education Week. It was a good time. I was one of only three media members and only here at KSL Sports, one of only two outlets actually at that event. So I'll share my thoughts and takeaways from the Tom Holmoe Education Week, and we'll go in that direction. That voice you heard coming in was Zach Wilson. He's 100% ready to go, and that's one of the big storylines for BYU as they now transition into game prep for the Utah Utes, the number 14 Utah Utes. Utah ranked in the top 25 preseason for the first time in 10 years since 2009, and it's going to be a tall order for BYU. It's going to be a competitive game. There's no doubt about it. I got a story up right now on KSLSports.com looking at BYU's history in home openers, in Provo. Season opener, home opener in Provo. Does that make sense? That's a little bit of a tongue twister there, but not the first home game, but the first game of the season and having it be at home. Interesting enough, BYU has only played since 1972, Lavelle Edwards' first season, only 19 times to start a season in Provo. This is going to be the 20th since 1972. I would have thought there would have been a higher number. I mean, you think about all the programs in the Power 5 conferences, they're usually never leaving their home venue unless it's a neutral site game against a big team. BYU, they take their show on the road a lot of times over the decades and over the years. And this year, though, they're fortunate enough to have three of their first four games at home. And that's a nice luxury compared to years past. But I go into the history of BYU's season openers in Provo on KSLSports.com. And I got to say, the best ones to me that BYU's had since 1972, the Pigskin Classic, 1996, BYU defeated number 13 Texas A&M. That's the only time BYU has defeated a nationally ranked team to open up a season in Provo. They've faced two other ranked teams to open a season in Provo. Those came in 1997 against number 4 Washington. I didn't realize Washington was ranked that high. That's one of the things I enjoy about doing these pieces on KSLSports.com is I get a little bit of a refresher and kind of learn something that maybe I didn't realize at the time. That Washington team in 1997 was number 4 in the country heading in. They were a really good squad. Brock Heward, sophomore quarterback, they were talented. And then in 2005, number 22 Boston College defeated BYU in Bronco Mendenhall's opener 20-3. And I remember with that game, BYU fans booed. They booed Bronco Mendenhall, and that was a sore topic for Mendenhall for years after. I remember 2 years later in another home opener to open up a season, 2007, BYU played Arizona. They won that game. Harvey Unga was fantastic. Max Hall, their debuts, they were great. But the debut of punter C.J. Santiago, he got booed. And I remember in the post game, Bronco said, me and C.J. can bond over that both of us had our own fans boo us. It was always a sore kind of thing for Bronco, and rightfully so. But BYU was in a tough place at that time. They were 3 straight losing seasons. It was a tough spot. But those are some of the games that BYU has faced against ranked teams to open up a season. Utah is going to be the 4th team to come to Provo, nationally ranked, to open up a season. Some other notables in season openers in Provo, 2004, Notre Dame. Amid all the scandals that were taking place off the field, BYU carved out a win against the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Fun note on that, it was the first ever HD broadcast for a BYU football game. Choke on that. That's what you could get on the Cougar Tracks podcast. Great insight and weird facts like that. The first HD BYU football game, 2004, against Notre Dame. One of my personal favorites was the 2001 game. BYU takes down Tulane 70-35. Gary Crowan's debut was lights out awesome. BYU was great in that BCA Classic. And remember, Tulane had a good backfield. They had Mawelde Moore at running back, who went on to play in the NFL. Patrick Ramsey, who played in the NFL. They also had backup quarterback J.P. Lossman, who was a first-round quarterback in the NFL. Tulane had some dudes. They had some players at the skill spots, but they didn't have much else, and they couldn't have any answer for Brandon Doman and Luke Staley. Other notables include, more recently, 2010, BYU defeating Washington 23-17. Remember, that was the game where Jake Heaps, Riley Nelson, they were not only a two-quarterback system, but they were literally alternating each series. First series, I believe, gosh, I got to go fact check this, but I believe it was Riley Nelson, and then it went to Jake Heaps, and then it went to Riley Nelson. Weirdest dang thing. And I think it backfired for BYU because they thought they could continue to do that and have success with it, but they learned the hard way and started out 1-4 that season. 2012, BYU defeated Washington State and spoiled the debut of Mike Leach from the Palouse. 30-6, Kenny Akua-Friel, he had an awesome game. I think he was tight end of the week nationally in college football. So there's been some great home openers. One that I didn't enjoy, 2017 against Portland State. That was the last time BYU opened the season at home in Provo, and that one was awful. BYU won 20-6, but Portland State was a winless team that year. They were the worst defense in the FCS, and they kept BYU to 20 points. That just gives you perspective of how bad BYU was 2 seasons ago. And remember the narrative coming out of that Portland State game? Oh, Detmer's holding back the playbook. Oh, Kalani's got more tricks up his sleeves. Just wait for LSU. No, that was really what it was, folks. And the secondary for Portland State, oh, they got some NFL dudes. They got some NFL guys. No. That was just foreshadowing how terrible that 2017 season truly was. Hopefully, BYU performs a lot better against the Utes in just 1 week from today. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be a good game. And you're listening to the Cougar Tracks podcast powered by KSLSports.com. And fall camp officially in the books. It's in the rearview mirror. And now the focus goes to Utah. And I think the big storyline coming out of camp to me is simply Zach Wilson. I put him as the number one reason you should be excited for BYU football in 2019. And I'm even more confident in that statement when he's telling the media he's 100%. Now, is that an accurate statement? I don't know. We'll see. He hasn't been hit yet. There hasn't been, the bullets haven't been flying in a game since December in that bowl game. But man, Zach Wilson's got abilities. He's got talent. And the thing is with Zach Wilson too, this whole notion about explosive plays, it's because of Zach Wilson. His arm is really leading the charge with BYU getting those explosive plays. And you know darn well Kalani Sitake loves him some explosive plays.
It's like Will Ferrell's cowbell. I can never have enough explosiveness.
I got to have more cowbell.
That's right. I got to have more cowbell. BYU needs that cowbell if they want to have an explosive offense. You know, I was talking with Jason Beck, host of the Rivals podcast, and I mentioned this in the previous episode in my interview with Kyle Ireland, but hearing Jason Buck speak highly of the offense and how potentially explosive they could be, it got me excited.
I gotta have more cowbell.
I need that cowbell. And if BYU is putting up some big plays, those chunk yardage plays, that's going to give them an opportunity to have success against Utah. I mean, you go through the years against the Utes. Point to me big chunk yardage plays against Utah.
I gotta have more cowbell.
It just hasn't happened very often. BYU does not get that big play often against the Utes. Now, the times that they do, they win. 2007, 4th-and-18, big chunk yardage play, Austin Cauley. 2006, to open up the game, BYU starts out 14-0. They're going down the sideline to Johnny Harleen. They're having big plays. They win that game. They held on, but they won that game. BYU's got to get some chunk yardage plays. I mean, in the independence era, can you think of many chunk yardage plays BYU has had against the Utes? Now, I'm going to take some deep dive into some of these box scores and matchups that have taken place during this losing streak. But again, I mean, memory doesn't serve many big plays for BYU. I remember Jake Heaps had a big touchdown pass to Ross Apple that actually gave BYU the lead 10-7 in 2011. But then, of course, the turnovers happened and BYU was a mess the rest of the way in that game. So I got to have more cowbell with this BYU offense. I got to have it.
I got to have more cowbell.
They got to have those explosive plays. And you know, Kalani, who his background coaching-wise is defensively, but he's got to have the explosive plays.
It's like Will Ferrell's cowbell. I can never have enough explosiveness.
I got to have more cowbell.
So BYU, they're heading into game week, game prep. They got to be more explosive. They got to be ready to go. And Zach Wilson being 100%, that's a big thing for this BYU offense. Right now on KSLSports.com, I have my projected end of fall camp depth chart up on the site. You can go check that out right now, currently. So coming out of camp, BYU still got some positions that got some question marks as far as who's going to start, who's going to get the most action in games. But, you know, we're going to get those answers against Utah. We're going to learn who are the guys that won the day in fall camp against Utah. Monday, we'll get a depth chart probably from the media notes and the press conference, but still, that's nothing necessarily official. I mean, Kalani Sitake and the media relations team, they could just totally throw something off the rails and throw off everyone on the scent. So we're not going to truly know the depth chart until next Thursday, but I gave some projections on KSLSports.com, and I know you're wondering, what about the running backs? Where's that going to stand against Utah? Folks, I really think Tyson Williams, Lopini Katoa, I've been saying it a lot, but you can slice it in a lot of different ways, but I think both these guys are going to get an equal amount of run. Unless someone in that first quarter just really pops off instantly, I think both guys are going to get equal share of reps, equal share of carries in that game, and Emmanuel Asukpa is going to be that number third back. Number four back, Tyler Algier. Number five, Sione Finau. Other positions that are question marks right now as far as who's going to start, who's going to get the most action. You know, that Mike linebacker position, I got to say, hard to read on that spot. Now, Keenan Peely has been the guy, from what I'm hearing, that's getting the most first-team run with the defense. In the scrimmage on Wednesday, he was lining up with Zane Anderson, with Isaiah Kaufusi. From what I hear, I didn't get to see the practice. I didn't get to see the scrimmage. But from what I hear, Keenan Peely was that first team guy. I put him atop the depth chart. His name was listed first, but would not be surprised if Kavika Fanua, if he's healthy, he gets the start. I don't know. Peyton Wilgar, he's been one of the better stories in fall camp. I can make a case for all three of those guys. I think the one individual, though, that I feel like I can maybe put in the fourth spot is Jax Kaufusi. That's just kind of my read on the situation. But I think Keenan Peely could very well be the starting middle linebacker, and that's quite the development considering 1 week into fall camp, he was on the outside, wasn't sniffing the middle linebacker spot. Now, he might be the number one guy. If you want to go with experience, you got to go Kavika Fanua. But health-wise, he's been banged up a ton. Ankle problems even in fall camp that have sidelined him and given opportunities to that of Keenan Peely and Peyton Wilgar. So we'll see. Mike linebacker's going to still be up for grabs. A thing, as I will say with that position, and I was talking with Dave McCann on KSL TV about this, BYU doesn't need a star to emerge at the middle linebacker spot. They don't. They really don't. They have two talented linebackers right now playing on the outside. It's Zane Anderson and Isaiah Kaufusi. Those guys are rock stars. They're going to be fantastic. I can go with my Scott Farrell voice. They're going to be rock stars. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Isaiah Kaufusi, Zane Anderson, these guys are absolute bona fide rock stars. Oh, man. I should do my entire show in a Scott Farrell voice. Are you freaking kidding me? Look at the boundary linebacker. Isaiah Kaufusi, what an absolute baddie. That guy can hit hard. He can play football like he's got his head on fire. He's an absolute rock star. Man, I'm losing my voice. You know, I've been watching a lot of Hard Knocks right now, I will say. And seeing Frank Caliendo has made me want to master my impressions. I'll tell you what, man. Get John Gruden. How great would it be to have John Gruden talking like Tennessee BYU? I'll tell you what, man. I met my wife at Tennessee, man. These Tennessee Volunteers, this Guarantano kid, he reminds me a lot of the sheriff, man. Oh, Hey, I know what you're thinking. Stick with your day job, Mitch. Stick with the day job. I'll make sure to do that. Other positions in the step chart on KSLSports.com. Cornerback, I got Dion Gawolakut. That's a lock. That's a given. And then D'Angelo Mandel. A strong push made by Isaiah Heron, but I still think Mandel gets that start to begin the season at right cornerback. Safety position. Free safety. It's going to be Austin Lee, no doubt about it. Strong safety. Man, I feel like Bo Tanner's the third guy. Just because what message does that send, having him be the starter if he does, in fact, become the guy? But he's been a dude that's bounced every spring practice. He's gave up every year. He's been a guy that's seen the finish line, and Preston Hadley has loved his story, and he's checked his ego at the door. But can you honestly start him in week one? I don't think so. So I would still go with the experience here. I'd go Sawyer Powell. But I feel like potential Malik Moore's got the highest ceiling, but that's because he's young. Sawyer Powell, I'd go with the upperclassman. I'd go with the guy that's got the experience, the guy that knows the defense. I think that's the better bet against Utah. Austin Lee, though, like I said in the Scott Farrell voice, he's going to be a rock star. Austin Lee's going to be great. I like what I'm seeing from Lee. Physically, he's going to be a guy that's a hard hitter. He's going to remind me a lot of a former BYU safety that has the same last name, Jared Lee. Kind of reminds me in that same breath as far as that physical safety that can get up and play and hit and lay the lumber on these guys. I really like me some Austin Lee. And then finally, the special teams, Jake the Make, you better get that leg ready, man. You got to get that leg ready. Oldroyd, I think it's going to be the kicker and the punter. Kickoffs, I think it's going to be handled by Skylar Southam. Long snapper, Mitch Harris. Holder, Hayden Livingston. But Jake the Make, be ready. And you like the fact that he's already had a game winner. He's got to stay healthy because BYU desperately needs him to come through. But that's the BYU football depth chart conversation. Into fall camp, Cougars now. In game prep week, and you can check out all that content on KSLSports.com.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
All right, welcome back in to the Tracks Podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. Tom Homo spoke to the Education Week audience that paid to see his BYU Athletics Q&A session. Now, Cougar fans got the chance to ask him a boatload of questions for about an hour and 10 minutes. Now, the Q&A portion went a little bit shorter. I think it was about 50 minutes because Tom had a little bit of an open dialogue, monologue to kind of begin the Education Week class. He talked about, I believe it was John A. Maxwell, the five steps of leadership, something along those lines. I'll have to go check, double check the exact phrase that Tom was discussing. But a lot of questions, a lot of discussion. And the thing is with Tom is we go in the media because, again, it was me, Jay Drew, Jeff Call from Deseret News. So Deseret News and KSL Sports, that was it. Those are the only media outlets that covered that thing. And it's not common for media to go to those things, but, you know, it's an opportunity to hear from BYU's athletic director. And as Tom mentioned at the beginning of the Q&A, he did say that, you know, anytime he speaks, it's going to end up in the paper. So he kind of keeps he watches what he says, but nonetheless, excited to hear for his commentary on some of these topics. And in the previous episode, I was curious as to where Tom Homo was in regards to Yoeli Childs, and Tom, you know, addressed it firsthand. You know, one of the questions that was tossed to him was kind of a vague question saying, when players have issues with compliance, how does BYU handle those type of student athletes? And Tom's like, what's your question? And the gentleman was, and then this woman chimed in, what happened to Yoeli Childs? And then Tom's like, there we go. Thank you. And then he goes into Yoeli Childs, is very candid about it, you know, and acknowledged that, hey, they were trying to get in touch with Yoeli, but as he put it, Yoeli was in a hard place at that time. He wasn't too thrilled about maybe the trajectory of BYU basketball at that point. His last game as a Cougar was an absolute annihilation, a loss against San Diego in the West Coast Conference Tournament. So, new head coach, who knew who's going to be the head coach? A lot of uncertainty. And Yoeli Childs was really kind of closing himself off and wasn't responding to the attempts by Tom, as he put it, to get in touch with him. And it led to this clerical error that basically put Yoeli Childs ineligible for the entire season. Now, BYU appealed that, got him eligible again, but he had to serve a 9-game suspension. So, tough situation all around, but I appreciated to hear Tom Homo's insight on that. Now, I also like, too, how he said it's egregious. It is egregious. Yoeli Childs being suspended for 9 games is absolutely egregious to the highest levels. The NCAA is a joke. It's a sham, and he should not be serving these 9 games, but he is, and that's what happens here in these type of situations, because the NCAA is trying to hold on to any sort of power they have left when it comes to collegiate athletics. Another question that stood out to me from the Education Week Q&A was a gentleman asked from the back row, asked Tom Homo, how does he feel about BYU's brand compared to 10 years ago? And he said that it's good. You know, he looks at the analytics. He looks at the data. He feels that BYU's brand is good. And he also went into different avenues of brands. To him, he views a brand, meaning something that you can see and then you feel something while you're watching them. Thought that was interesting. He says brands are not about jerseys, even though he did note players all the time are pulling his arm and leg about the jerseys all the time. But brand is, to Tom Holmoe, is when you watch someone or watch something and you feel something. That's brand to Tom Holmoe. Other conversations that took place at the Q&A, TV kick times were addressed. One of the fans, I think she was in the front row, asked about what can be done to eliminate all these late night kickoffs in college football. And then Tom went into discussion about all these Power 5 conference teams are doing it. I kind of got thinking to myself, not really. Like, the SEC isn't playing at 8:15 Mountain Time. They're not playing at 10:15 Eastern. Granted, they're out in the Central and Eastern time zones, but they're not playing late night kicks. The latest they usually go out on the East Coast for the SEC is at latest 7:30. No one out east and in the Central time zone is playing kicks at 8 o'clock at night. They're just maybe the AAC a little bit, but that's not Power 5. Big 12 teams, they're usually pretty much done by about 6 o'clock. I know Big 10 teams, they are historically, they were always done by about noon. I mean, they would get all their games kicked off by noon and get them rolling. Now they'll have some prime time 6 o'clock games maybe, but you're not seeing on the site, on location, 8 p.m. kicks. It's only out on the West Coast, Pac-12, BYU, and the Mountain West. It's a tough ordeal. But as Tom mentioned, BYU needs the money. And it was interesting to hear that, because when you talk about, you know, going back in time 10 years ago to now, when BYU went independent, they didn't say the move was about money. You could read between the lines and you knew money was a big factor, no doubt about it. Everyone wants some money. Everyone wants some extra green. But for him to say, we want the money. We need the money. I appreciate the honesty, because it's true. BYU does need its own money. BYU has to run and operate on their own. They don't have a conference to buoy them. They have to run it on their own dime. So they need the money. That's why they're going to play the late night kicks. And honestly, I might be in the minority here, but I like the late night kicks. I mean, again, I get it, the whole get home at 1 or 2, but I kind of like that. I don't know. Like, I'm a night owl. Like, I stay up late. I love getting stuff done between the hours of 8 to, like, 2 or 3 a.m. Like, that's just what I do. It's literally what I do. I can't get much done in the morning, afternoon as much if I'm not in the office or in my own personal office, because my kids and everything like that. Same with college football Saturdays. I can't get much done if I'm just at home. And I can't watch many games if I'm just at home. But at the nighttime, hey, kids are tucked in. Everything's squared away. I can just sit back, enjoy, and watch some BYU football or some college football. So I might be in the minority, but I like me some late night football. Heck, I like watching the Hawaii game at like 10:15. And they got about 4 or 5 Facebook games this year. So yeah, I'm locking into that. So late night game to me, I'm not too hell-bent on getting rid of those, as some people are. Look, I get it. Back in the day, noon kick, 1 p.m. kick, Blue and White Sports Network, KSL 5 TV, it was on like Donkey Kong. But the thing was, is like, hey, times change. BYU needs the money, and Tom Holmoe clearly acknowledges that. One thing I also love, too, Tom's philosophy on scheduling. Hey, he asked a vote of hands in the room. He said, hey, by a show of hands, of you here in the audience today, do you like the 4-game schedule that we got to start the open the 2019 football season? By a show of hands, raise your hands. Literally, almost everyone except maybe 4 or 5 people raised their hands and said they liked the 4-game schedule to open up the 2019 season. And then he said, by a show of hands, who doesn't like the 4-game schedule to open this campaign? And like I said, 4 or 5 people raised their hands. Look, I'm with the majority as well. I want to see BYU play Utah, play Tennessee, play Washington, play USC. In an ideal world, yeah, it's more staggered. And you're playing those four P5s in August, in September, in October, in November. I get all that. But hey, folks, what has the 10-win seasons, what has the conference championships in the WAC gotten BYU at all? What has it gotten them? Hey, they're in this spot where they're in right now. BYU's got 23 conference championships, and where has it gotten them? Look, I want to see BYU beat some Goliaths. I don't want this whole, oh, playing a, got a 10-win season and you beat a bunch of nobodies. Look, prime example, look at Utah State. Utah State wins 11 games last year, had one of the 15 worst schedules in college football a season ago. Is anyone talking about them nationally? Yeah, locally, you're hearing some people going, oh, Utah State. They've passed up BYU. No, they haven't passed up BYU. Now, credit to Utah State, they're maximizing their resources, I think, better than BYU, and they're building better facilities than BYU. So I'll give them that, no doubt about it. But who's talking nationally about Utah State? No one. And they played a bunch of nobodies. Their best win was a 7-win BYU team. Do you want to live in that world, BYU fans? For the vocal minority that wants these just 10-win seasons and this terrible schedule, why? Go follow recruiting. Recruits want to play Power 5 teams. They don't want to play Mountain West teams week after week after week, especially as an independent. And the thing is, BYU as an independent gets the best of what the G5 leagues have to offer. Oh, you want to play Boise State? Okay, we'll play them. You want to play Utah State? Okay, we'll play them. You want to play UCF in a home and home? BYU's played them. BYU can play the best of the G5 conferences as an independent. Why do you need to go to these leagues? Why do you need to dumb down the schedules? You got to play more Power 5s. You got to play more Power 5 teams. Honestly, to me, you got to get to a point where you're playing 7 or 8 Power 5 teams. You want to walk the talk and act like a Power 5 team, you got to play them. And the thing is, that's the philosophy of Kalani Sitake and Tom Holmo. Now, I would say the sweet spot with scheduling on P5s is probably realistically 6, but if they have seasons where you can get 7 coming up in 2021, where you can maybe get 8 Power 5 teams, they're going to do it. And I like that because that's what BYU has always wanted to be. I remember watching BYU football back in the 90s, and I remember people always wanted to see what would BYU look like against power, or not, they weren't saying Power 5 teams, alliance teams or teams in those conferences that were the major conferences back then. What would they look like? Maybe it's a little bit of a harsh reality in independence because they got far less resources than these teams, but you got to go out and play. If BYU wants to be competitive in this path, this unique path of independence that no one else in college football has done, and I'm not including Notre Dame because they've always just been grandfathered in since the Four Horsemen days, BYU is going on this unique path. This is what they have to do. Winning 10 games against a bunch of nobodies does nothing. And the thing is, too, is go look at the history in independence. The strength of schedule rankings are still not that high. It's still in like the low 60s, the high 70s. This year might be an exception, but history has shown that these schedules that we say, oh my gosh, how is BYU going to navigate this? They don't end up as tough as what we once thought. Keep scheduling up the Power Fives. Keep loading up. And I like Tom Holmo's views on that independent schedule. I'll have more on Tom Holmo's roundtable. Well, not roundtable, but his Education Week class Q&A on KSLSports.com. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Cougar Tracks podcast. I'm fired up. That scheduling stuff, like, you got to step up. You got to play big boys. You can't play down. BYU wanted to do that. Just go back to the G5 leagues. You took this path for a reason. Kalani Sitake wants to play Power Fives. He's got a better measuring stick of his program by playing Power Five programs. But I digress. in the words of Stephen A. Smith, but I digress. So again, that's going to be Cougar Tracks Podcast powered by KSLSports.com. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It helps out the podcast a ton. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Talking some more BYU football as the countdown to the Utes rolls on here on the Cougar Tracks Podcast powered by KSLSports.com.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.